it was kind of a cool deal. It was kind of a cool moment for me. I'll never forget that day, that moment. But yeah, that was it, man. I just kept telling myself, once I get an opportunity, you can't let them take that away from you. And that's kind of where I went.
Welcome to What's Next with Eric Wood, where we will prepare you to make your what's next in life your best yet. Our next guest is A.Q. Shipley, and A.Q. is a 12-year NFL veteran that played for the Steelers, Eagles, Colts, Ravens, Cardinals, and Buccaneers. He won the Remington Award for the best center in college football in 2008 and was a member of the Buccaneers Super Bowl team in 2021. A.Q. has an incredible story of resilience in the NFL before suffering a career-ending neck injury, just like myself. We're going to have some fun center-to-center talk on this podcast, and you will love hearing his story. If you haven't already, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you tune in weekly. And also, if you haven't already, go to Amazon and order my new book, Tackle What's Next, and the link to that is in the show notes. Thanks, and enjoy. AQ, welcome to the podcast, brother.
Honored to be here, brother.
Yeah, I'm fired up for this, and let's start here. I'm an Ohio guy originally. You're Pennsylvania. Who has better high school football between the two states?
It's a great question. I think, you know, some of that's been diminished a little bit with kind of all the early enrollments and all that stuff. But the Big 33 used to kind of really bring that thing together. I used to kind of love that. I played in that game. And, you know, I think they even did away with it when Pennsylvania, Maryland for a couple of years. But, man, that was such a cool thing there for a while. But it is. It's great football. I think Ohio probably does now. I think there for a minute Pennsylvania was rolling, but I think I have done some reading recently, and I think they've kind of had a little drop off. I don't know what the reason for that is, but yeah, I think Ohio's there right now.
Yeah, probably. But like anything, the talent's cyclical, and from Ohio, we always respected Pennsylvania football and vice versa. It's cool to hear. And then I understand, and I talked to a couple Montour guys before hopping on this podcast. I heard you're a pretty good high school basketball player.
Yeah, I could play a little bit. That's fun. That's funny that got brought up. It's every time somebody sees me, it's like I used to go play these pickup games. It's funny. And like they'd look at me, they're like, oh, this little 6 foot guy who's as round as he is tall. Like there's no way he can play basketball, right? And they'd be like, oh man, he got a little game to him, right? And so it's funny. I played down low just because of how wide I was, but like I played it at a young age, and just I honestly attribute a lot of the quickness and different things I had from football to that, just being on the court at such a young age.
Yeah, most offensive linemen that get to the NFL played other sports growing up, weren't an offensive lineman their whole life, which gives you the quickness and athleticism to then put on all the weight and play in the National Football League. The defensive linemen are too athletic. You can't just be a slug out there. And then I'll say this before we get into your story. I'm very glad that from your high school, we got Bill Ashburn at Louisville and not you, or else I probably would have never seen the field at center. I'd have had to play guard or somewhere else. But thank God we got Bill. No offense, Bill. Good player in his own right. Just didn't play the same position as me.
No doubt. No, I mean, I appreciate those comments, but I got so much respect for your game. I mean, when I was picking and choosing where I'd go, I didn't want any competition. I don't know why I didn't want it, but it's so funny that you say that. I mean, when we got to about our sophomore year or whatever, I think you started like all our names kind of started circulating. You'd see your name, my name, Mac, Unger, right? And so I got so much respect for what you did as not only as a college player, obviously you had an unbelievable professional career. So props to you, brother.
Well, I appreciate it. The respect is obviously mutual. And you go through Penn State, have an illustrious career, and then you get drafted to your hometown Steelers. I grew up a huge Bengals fan. I can't imagine what it'd been like to get drafted there. The Bengals told me pre-draft, hey, look, we don't trade picks in the draft. We have the 6th pick in the draft. Obviously, we're not taking you there. And you're likely not there at 38. So I hope you enjoy your pre-draft visit, but you're not likely going to be a Bengal. That being said, what was it like getting drafted to the Steelers?
You know, it was so like at the moment, Eric, it was such a cool feeling, right? Like all my family and friends are there. And I obviously went a little later just because of my height and different things like that, that weren't kind of in my cards to go earlier. But I hear the call, I'm going to Pittsburgh, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be awesome. Like I was so pumped. I was so excited. And looking back on it, it was probably the worst thing for me, right? I got people pulling at me from every direction. I got everybody that knows who I am. All my high school friends are still there. I'm probably not putting 100% focus into what I should have been doing. you know, I'm going out, I'm doing things that I probably shouldn't have done early. I was just kind of enjoying the moment way too much. And the best thing for me, so I probably didn't put my best foot forward that first year. I go on the practice squad and then they try and re-sign me after that year. And the best thing I could have done was go to Philadelphia, like just remove myself from that situation. And I was talking to my agent after, and, you know, he was like, hey, like, you know, Philly was going to draft you a couple picks later and they're interested in signing you right now. And I was like, all right, like I'll go there. And Juan Castillo was the O-line coach there. And it's funny, man. I had so many talks with him pre-draft, but when I actually got to play for him, he did so much for my game and my career. Coming out of college, like I was built to run block, but I felt like I was probably a step behind in pass blocking. And he gave me so much confidence in the way that he taught protection and throwing your hands and doing all these things that I really didn't do coming out of college. So, yeah, it was kind of a double-edged sword. But, like, to answer your question fully, like, yeah, it was awesome in the moment, but the best thing for me was to get out of Pittsburgh.
Right, and I feel like I would have been the exact same way. Whenever I went back to Cincinnati and played, that would likely be my cheapest game check, my least profitable game check because of all the tickets. And I never felt like I played that great in Cincinnati, and it was likely because I'm just dealing with so much around me. So I can relate to that completely. I also played for Juan, and I mean, I got to play for Juan later in my career, and I love that dude. And he treats veterans very well. I'm sure it was back and over.
Bam, throw your hand.
Love Juan. And I just got to play for him for 1 year, but we still talk to this day. He's very intentional about reaching out to former guys and all that. And after my neck injury, he was always in my corner, and truly, truly appreciated that about him. And you mentioned you went in the seventh round, and we could fill an entire podcast about how the NFL and often the pundits, the GMs, everybody puts a lot of stock into the measurables and not enough stock into a multiple time captain, a leader, a dude who was the best center in college football the year before, tested well at the combine, but he's got short arms. But then you go on to play 12 years and outplay most of the guys in the draft class. And so we don't even need to expand on that any further than I get it, brother. It is what it is. And, you know, the arm strength and everything else that we put into quarterbacks and arm length for offensive linemen and everything else, it's amazing that a guy like Aaron Donald can fall. And look, he was still a first rounder, but he was the best player in college football the previous year at Pitt. And even he falls in the draft because he's a little bit shorter, and then he takes over and he's the best defensive player in all the NFL. But on your story, so you're on the practice squad your first 3 years in the league, but have a 12-year NFL career. How tough was it knowing in those 3 years, like, I have the ability, I know I can play in this league, I just need the opportunity? How tough was that?
Super tough, but it's exactly what you just said. That's exactly what you just said, and that's exactly what I just kept telling myself. I was like, listen, like, I'm watching James Laurinaitis start for the Rams. I'm watching all these guys that I mean, you know, Brandon Graham, guys, you know, that I played at Michigan and Ohio State and all these different teams. Ray Maluga, who, you know from playing with the Bengals, obviously, and Cushing and Clay Matthews, all these guys I played against in college that I played well against. And I'm like, listen, like, if these guys are succeeding, like, I know I can. And so it was just a matter of getting that opportunity. And I knew I didn't get that fair crack, you know, because as you said, we could talk about this for days if you wanted to, about, you know, a scout in Northwest United States says, arms are a little short, eyes
right,
short, right? And so, and those things, and then, and once you get pigeonholed and once you get put in these things, it's perception is reality, right? And so that's kind of where I was for a little bit, but I just kept telling myself, like, just keep fighting. And, you know, once you get that one opportunity, I also knew that I didn't have much wiggle room either. Like, I knew that when I got my first chance to play, like, I had to play, right? And so I remember, and it's funny talking about it now, because my O-line coach, who I played for most of my career, is the O-line coach down in Tampa now, Harold Goodwin. I remember sitting in a meeting with him the Friday before I got my first start. We're playing the Green Bay Packers. I'm playing with the Colts. We're playing the Packers. I got BJ Raji, big nose guard, who's, I mean, you know him. So I'm getting ready to play him, and he's like, hey, like, I know you're going to do well this week. He's like, but I'm just letting you know kind of where this organization is. You know, if you don't play well, they're probably going to go out and get someone else on Monday, right?
Wow.
Like, and it was kind of, you know, guys can take that one of two ways, right? I'm one of the guys that always, like, I'm fine with that type of motivation, right? And other guys might crack at that, right? And so when I got that, I was like, all right, I got to go. And we're down 21-3 in the first half, playing the Packers. Aaron Rodgers, obviously, like, on his stuff, right? They just won the Super Bowl the year before. We come back and beat them, like, 31-30, I think it was. And from that point forward, I'm playing. So it was kind of a cool deal. It was kind of a cool moment for me. I'll never forget that day, that moment. But yeah, that was it, man. I just kept telling myself, once I get an opportunity, you can't let them take that away from you. And that's kind of where I went.
Yep, that's the classic preparation meets opportunity. Some could say it was lucky that you were able to step in at that time and this and that. But no, you were prepared for that moment. You had prepared since you were a kid for that moment, all through high school and college. You prepared for that moment and you made the most of it. I can't imagine the pressure that would go into going into an NFL. There's enough pressure, especially in your first start. And then for them to say, like, hey, your job's on the line as well. Like, there's no grace period here, AQ. We are likely going to move on if you don't do well, but hey, you made the most of it. And then you play for a long time after that. You played for four different teams under Bruce Arians, and I've only seen him from afar. I've seen him through Hard Knocks and all that. What makes him so special as a head coach?
You know, it's so funny. We always talk about this it, right? Like, and whatever that it is, he has it. It's unbelievable. And you see it, you see the teams that he's had. Even when, I mean, we were average teams on paper at best out here in Arizona, we'd still finish 500 or one game above 500. Like, we had no business being 8-8 or 9-7, whatever it was. And he just has this uncanny ability of demanding accountability from everybody from the top down. And so it's like a step below fear almost. You almost like fear like where he's going to go, but it's not fear. Right. And so he's big. I don't know if you've ever heard him talk about his accountability sheets, and it's, you know, he's big on that. I don't know. I mean, I played for him most of my career, and all the other coaches I played for didn't do this. So I don't know how many coaches do it, but it was every practice, every game, you come in the next morning in front of the whole group. First thing on the projector in front of everybody, it has just a list of numbers, the play, and what you screwed up, right? And so the whole group seeing, you know, if I'm wearing number 62, right, and there's 5 62s up there for mental errors, it's like, man, what was AQ doing yesterday, you know? And so you never wanted that. And so I think, like, that echoed around the entire locker room. It echoed around the entire group. And then now if you see a bunch of O-linemen on there, now the O-line coach is like, man, like, I don't want to be up there either. This is bad look on the group. And so you mix that with his ability to wear the hat, to be the best dressed when he walks in the building, to have the way he talks to the guys and being cool. He's like the ultimate, has all your attention and respect on the field, but off the field, he's one of the boys, and he'll have a cocktail with you and do that whole thing, right? Like, that's just kind of how he is. And so everybody loves him that plays for him. He's just awesome.
Yeah, for all those listening out there, no matter what line of work you're in, if you're a leader, it's accountability and relationship, especially nowadays. And you probably saw it throughout your NFL career. The young guys coming in are just a touch more sensitive than we used to be. And it's not their fault. It's social media. It's the likes. It's the way they were recruited. It's the way their college coaches are now treating them. So they come in the league and they're not quite used to that accountability. They're not quite used to that tough love that maybe they're getting in the NFL. But Sean McDermott, same exact way, knows your wife's name, knows your girlfriend's name, knows who's most important to you in your life, knows them by name, asks you about them, but the accountability is real. And for him, it'd be on the projector as well, but it'd be the plays. Hey, you messed this up. And, you know, he's smart about it too. He'll pick on me or a Kyle Williams first to, like, okay, this isn't a pick on the young guys session. This is everybody, but it's that accountability, but then also having the relationship with the guys. And that's what produces on the field. I love hearing that. And a guy who I love asking people about him, and you got to spend a little bit of time with him. And for those watching on YouTube, you get to see his jersey behind AQ. What was it like playing that year with Tom Brady?
Oh man, there's nobody like him. There really is. I mean, and I got pretty, you know, just, I mean, the center quarterback thing's special. I mean, it's every team you've ever played for, I'm sure you were like this with the quarterbacks. I mean, yep. It is a special thing, right? And so, you know, it was so cool for me to just kind of watch the way he operated. Here's the thing. Like, I was never a Pro Bowler. I was never an All-Pro. Like, I mean, had a solid NFL career, played in over 100 and something games, right? And so, was I a completely household name? No, but I signed down in Tampa, you know, and I'd been talking with them all along, and it was, hey, listen, like, we're probably going to sign you, but we just got to get through training camp. We'll sign you towards the end. I said, okay, sounds good. Perfect for me. I don't have to go through a training camp. Perfect. Right. So I signed down there like August 25th or something like that. And I walk in the locker room. I go to the locker. I turn around. I'm coming out. I'm going to get into the training room to get ready for practice. First guy I see is Tom Brady. Walk over. He's like, hey, Q, how you doing, man? Good to meet you. I've heard so many good things about you. And I'm like, this is the ultimate professional, right?
Right.
You don't see that. A guy that's the greatest to ever touch leather, right? And he's the first person to know my name, like, make sure he comes up, introduce himself, that whole thing. And then that was like just the start of it. And then you watch him prepare. And the way that I always, like, I would pick his brain all year just to kind of see the way he operated. I just wanted to watch and see. And one of the coolest things I ever heard him say, he was just like, listen, like, I prepare from the minute the game's over until Sunday at 12:30 for a 1 o'clock game, 3:55 for a 4:05 game, 7:55 for an 8 o'clock game, whatever it is, right? And so when the game starts, I have all the answers to the test, AQ. I have them all. It's just about me going out and executing at that point. And so, and I watched it. I watched it time and time again. I watched the performance he put on in the Super Bowl against Steve Spagnuolo, who was a great defensive coordinator. And literally, he had an answer for every zero blitz he had, for every cover two, cover three, 2x2, 3x1, whatever it was, he had an answer. He had an answer. And that was, for me, that was the first time I ever saw like somebody just be able to go out there and just know exactly what to do versus any look they give at all times.
It's cool. Yeah. I love Tom Brady stories. I do. And yeah. I should hate Tom Brady. I mean, I played against him 18 times. We beat them 3 times, once straight up in 2011, once was Deflategate, and once they rested their starters in the second half. And so I should hate Tom Brady, but I had so much respect for him throughout my career because talk about another late round draft pick who just made the most of opportunities and worked like crazy, maybe sacrificed more than anybody in the NFL to get to the point where he's at. So I had a tremendous amount of respect for him. And then, like, to me, when I entered the NFL, there wasn't many people you step on the field, you're like, oh my gosh, they're so-and-so. Especially in the heat of battle, you're like, I don't care if that's Haloti Ngata or Ray Lewis. Like, we got to go block him. But when you go out for a coin toss and there's Tom Brady on the other side, you're like, do I shake his hand? Is this like, you know, that's the GOAT. You know, him and Peyton Manning were like the two guys you see on the field for me where I was like, holy smokes, there's so-and-so. And so, but then Tom Brady would treat me so good. And I'd see him in the tunnel after games. You know, in Buffalo, we all have the same tunnel, which is a terrible design, especially when you're going in the locker room at halftime and you've just been talking trash with somebody. But, you know, we come out of the locker room after the game and he's talking to me. He's around my family. I'm like, this is literally the greatest dude ever. And so to me, he's always been so impressive. And I love hearing those stories about him. But back to your story. In your 12th season, you suffer a career-ending neck injury. Talk to me about kind of the stream of events that went into that.
Yeah, so it happened before. The same exact thing had happened before. In 2013, I was playing with the Ravens. We played the Bengals at home in Baltimore, and we're running just a classic inside zone week, and I'm on the backside, nose loops away. I climb on Vontaze Burfict, collision, boom. I'm like neck down, got nothing. I'm like, man, this is crazy, right? Wow. So Eugene Monroe, who was my left tackle at the time, comes over, like grabs my hand. I'm like, bro, I can't feel anything. He's like, he like goes to help me up. And at that point, like now the feeling came back in my arms. My legs are still like a little wobbly. It didn't last nearly as long. And like, I kind of like wobbled a little bit. So they thought I had a concussion, test me on a concussion. I'm completely sharp. I'm like, it's Sunday. We're playing the Bengals. It's 2:30. They're like, okay, you don't have a concussion. Right. And so test my strength, boom, go back in. Good. All right, cool. So now I play from 13 to 20 and really had none like that. Obviously little stingers. We've all had stingers, right? Like,
right.
Boom. Here it comes back, boom, 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 you're back, right? And so, okay, we're playing the Rams Monday night, and I go uncovered, got a three technique, set, mic drops, boom, I go to take a shot on Michael Brockers right before impact. I'm like this, and I go to – and I used to love taking cleanup shots. I mean, you knew the way I played, right? And so
right.
I'd go and I'd kind of, I always have bad habit, but I'd always kind of like lead with that face mask. Right. So I'm here. And right before I make contact, Aaron Donald's slanting from the backside. And it's not much. Like you watch it on film, like he just kind of gets my hip just enough. So right before contact, he hits that hip and my head kind of does that. I just right underneath Brockers pinched. Boom. I just go limp. I'm like, oh, this is going to. This is it's, we got it again, right? And Brady comes over, same thing, puts his hand out. I'm like, I got nothing. And my legs are kind of like wobbling, like involuntarily. I'm like, man, this is scary. This is scary. And so by the time the trainers came back, came out to me, my feeling came back and pins and needles, all that stuff. And as a competitor, I'm like, oh, it's just another, like, it was a stinger. It was a bad stinger, but okay. It's a 2-minute drive. We're down 3 playing the Rams on Monday Night Football. Go off the sideline, test me for a concussion. You're good. Sharp as can be again. Monday night, it's probably around 11 o'clock, whatever it is. They're like, okay, let's test your strength. Test my strength. I got pins and needles as a competitor. I'm like, I'm sitting there. I'm fighting this thing. I'm good, right? So I'm standing on the sidelines. I'm going to go back in. I'm literally about to go back in the game. And – this is the way the world works, right? Brady throws an interception. Game over. I don't go back in. I'm literally about to go back in the next play. Brady throws an interception. Game over. They kneel on it. Check after the game. They're like, hey, we'll get an MRI tomorrow morning. Okay, sounds good. Get an MRI. They don't see anything, like, super bad, like, at first, just from, like, the team docs. And then they're like, we're going to send it over to the spine guy. Check it out. And I got a call from the trainer. Tuesday morning. So Monday I got the thing, go through all Monday thing. I think we were off, get a call Tuesday from the trainer again. He's like, hey, we're going to get another MRI. And I looked at my wife. I was like, this ain't good. Like, I know the way this works. So go get another MRI, go see a spine doctor on Wednesday. And, I was going to just drive over by myself. And the head trainer was like, he's like, hey, let me drive over with you. And I'm like, all right, I know where this is going. Literally walked in the thing. He was like, hey, pretty blunt too. I mean, it wasn't, I mean, you know the way doctors operate. Like there's no emotions, right? Like there's no, right. It's like, hey, we're just going to tell you how it is. And walked in. He's like, hey, see this right here? Like, I can't let you play football again. It was that quick. It was within 6 seconds. It was over, you know? And I was like, man, I'm just sitting in this room. Like, man, you know, it eats at you, but it is what it is. And, just kind of took that opportunity to kind of just help out the group the rest of the year, and ended up walking away with a ring, which was awesome.
Yeah. You walk away with the ring, you walk away essentially with your health. I'm in the same boat. It's weird having an injury like that. We both have done ACLs. We've had major injuries before, which keeps you on the couch for months at a time. And it's a long rehab process. You get this neck injury, which seems so routine. I'm the exact same way. And now I can't play football anymore. What do you mean? And I had a bunch of stingers in my final year in 2017 and didn't think anything of it. Same with you. And it's always interesting as a center, when you get a stinger and stay in the game, you're like, I sure hope this feeling in my right hand comes back before the next play, or else this snap could be real bad. Yeah. I'm like, my last year, I'm like, Tyrod, delay the huddle just a second. And he's like, you're a nut, go out. I'm like, no, I'm fine. But yeah, God got us out when he wanted to, because meatheads like us would have truly played till the wheels fell off, and then we'd never be able to play with our kids again. And it's awful and it stinks. It's a dream crusher, but in the same sense, we get to walk away with our health and live a normal life. And so,
No question. No question about that. Yeah. I mean, it's my wife's, I mean, I said the same thing. Cause you know, all of us, like as a competitor, you sit there and the cliche saying is, man, I just wish I could go out on my own terms. How many really get to go out on their own terms? And like, that's what my wife said. My wife's like, what, you were going to retire on your own next year if you were healthy? Like, no. Like, if somebody calls you in August and they're like, hey, you want to come back and play? You're going. Like, there's no question about it. You're going to go until either somebody tells you you're not good enough and you lost a step and you can't play anymore, or something bad happens. It's one of the two, right? And that's just the way it works.
Yep. And so you mentioned you were helping out the rest of the year coaching, and I've heard you talk about how it was just too many hours away from the family and you want to see your kids more. And I commend you for that. And I'm in the same boat. I would love to coach, but just not in the cards with our family dynamic now. And so you're doing a good amount of media work now. How are you enjoying that transition into that line of work?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Like, as players, you know, you look at the media in an interesting view, right? Because it's, you never know where that's going to go. But coaching was I loved the on the field stuff. I loved being around the boys, and it was really a unique thing for me because I'm around the boys as a coach with 90% of the guys that I played with as teammates the year before, which was a unique thing. And that was kind of one of the things they were trying, if they were coaching me up as a coach, they were probably like, hey, listen, like, you need to kind of get after Allie Marpet a little more, get after Jensen a little more. I'm like, I mean, I can coach these guys and not get after them. Right. I can talk to them, you know, and that's, I get that. But, you know, and so for me, you know, I'm sitting there in November, I'm missing Halloween with my 4-year-old, my 2-year-old. Now I got a 6-month-old, right? So I got 3 under 4. So it's like, man, I'm missing Halloween. I'm missing Christmas morning. I'm doing this. My 2-year-old, who was about a year and a half when I was coaching, like, I never saw her during the week because she's in bed by 6:30. I'm getting home at 8+, right? And so sometimes, maybe if I was lucky, I'd steal an extra day with my 4-year-old. I'm like, man, what am I doing? Like, I played way too long, worked way too hard, and set myself up to not have to do this so I could see my family. Like, what am I doing here? And so about December, like, I knew, like, after the season, I took like 2 weeks before I called Bruce, and, you know, I was just like, coach, like, I appreciate the opportunity. I know how hard it is to get into this job and this life and how sacred it is. Right. And so I just, I can't do it. Like, I can't miss this time in my kids' lives. And pivoting into the media thing, I'd been doing some interviews and doing some things on Pat McAfee's show, which Pat and I are like this. We became super close at the College Football Award show. He was up for the punter award. I obviously won the center deal, and we became pretty tight then. Fast forward a couple of years, we're teammates with the Colts. Hit it off, boom, become super close. Fast forward again, he's in my wedding, I'm in his wedding, and there was a point, and I love Dan Orlovsky, love Dan. And there was a point in the offseason where Dan posted a clip, and he was blaming the offensive line for not picking up this blitz. And I'm like, what's a Mike Sam blitz? That's on the running back, right? It's like, that's not on the offensive line. So I call Pat, and I'm like, hey, have you seen this clip Orlovsky put up, you know? And I talk to Dan all the time about this, and Dan knows it's funny, but like, so Pat goes, hey, would you want to come on like my show like once a week and just kind of do some breakdown stuff and just kind of explain some of this stuff? And I'm like, sounds good. So that's literally how my segment on his show came about. And so I'm having a blast with it. I'm able to stay in the game, and it's been really cool for me to study other offenses as opposed to just kind of being dialed in the same offense I played in for, you know, most of my career. And so now I get to kind of dive into that and break down the best kind of run plays of the week, find a good, you know, cleanup block. And it's a lot of fun. I have a lot of fun hanging out in a man cave type atmosphere with the boys, but I'm enjoying it. I hope it continues.
Yeah. It gives you that almost locker room setting, that camaraderie in the media, which isn't always the case. What's it like working with Pat? And you talked about it a little bit there, but more Pat the person. Like, yeah. There are some people that'll take shots at Pat and have over the years. I think that's getting less and less when they understand what type of grinder he truly is. And they thought, oh, he built this Twitter following and now he's getting opportunities that I've worked really hard and didn't get the opportunity for. But Pat is a person. What's it like working with him?
He's awesome. But I will say this, you know, it's he is such a good dude. I mean, he really is. And you see the crew that he has assembled, right? And a lot of them are his high school boys. So, like, one of my biggest pet peeves in life is, man, like, if you don't have loyalty, what do you really have, right? And so for him, he's as loyal of a person as there is. And the fact that he's kind of assembled his crew about the people that he kind of grew up with and has a ton of respect for and trust with them, along with some of the people he's met along the way, that same thing, loyal and trust, right? Like, that means everything, right, to a lot of people. And so for him, that one thing that I truly, truly respect about him too is, like, he comes off in this playful manner because that's his personality. He's, you know, he's phenomenal on the microphone. He's electric. He's funny. He's got all that quick-witted, right, all that stuff. But when he's in work mode, he works. I mean, my man works. And it's been cool for me to see this side of it, because I've been in the studio when it was literally a 300 square foot studio. They were basically putting a production together in like a back room, essentially, right? And now he's got this awesome studio that he's kind of built and worked for. But I mean, I get there Tuesday morning pretty early, and I mean, from the minute, I mean, he gets in there, gets his workout in early, and then, I mean, it is all business from that, and it's all about the show. It's all about putting a phenomenal show on for the people. So it's been really cool for me to watch him, because he hasn't strayed from who he is while still growing and putting a phenomenal show out for the people.
Yeah, that's really cool to hear. I got a tremendous amount of respect for him. You want to talk about a grind of a week, doing that daily show every day, then doing SmackDown on Friday, College Game Day. Now he's doing the simulcast for games on Saturday nights. And then Sunday, he's putting out content all day with whatever's going on in the NFL games. It's impressive to watch, and from afar, been a huge fan of his. I'll always think back to when we were at the Senior Bowl together, and it was like a running joke that they had a keg of beer in our players' lounge. And I almost thought it was like a test, like, who's going to be the dude who drinks beer this week? And it was Pat. And I respected that.
For sure. I mean, he is who he is. And that's one thing that I talked about it yesterday. And like, we actually had a pretty good conversation yesterday about how a lot of coordinators, right, like, when they become head coaches, it's almost like they sit in the back of the room and they're like, oh, well, I'm not going to do this when I become head coach, or I am going to change this when I become head coach, as opposed to just the reason you've been so successful as a coordinator, and the reason the guys love you, and the reason that all this stuff and success has come your way is because of who you are, right? Like, so that's one thing, like, I literally talked about yesterday on his show, is the fact that so many people change. They think when they get to a certain point of power that they need to change who they are. And they don't. They need to just continue to be what made them who they are to get there. And that's one thing that I have the utmost respect for, the way that he operates.
Man, that applies to any industry as well, not just football. That's great. All right, so you break down offensive line play each and every week on the show. And there's been so much talk in recent years about how O-line play in the NFL is regressing. Is that what you're seeing when you break down the film?
It's funny you say that, because I think there could be five different answers to this. And I guess the best way that I'll say to this is, do I think it's regressing? No, I think defensive line play has gotten tremendously better. I think defensive schemes have gotten tremendously better. So the teams that you're seeing have success now have good offensive linemen. They get good offensive line play, but they're also doing just a little bit more scheme wise to help out their offensive line, which I think you and me and everybody would appreciate. Like,
right,
sit there and line up and say, hey, let's just run duo all day long and run our heads against Lodi Nada and you know, Ndamukong Suh and all these guys who are just going to sit there like this, and Linval Joseph and all these guys, like that's uphill tread, right? Like that's uphill climbing. And so to watch, I did a play on the Bills yesterday, some of the stuff they're doing right now with sending this guy this way, pulling this way, like as a linebacker, you're in a blender. You have no idea what to do. And so if you can add those little wrinkles just to help your O-line just a tick, like that's the game right now. Because when you and I came in and we're playing against Pat and Kevin Williams and we're playing against Vince Wilfork and Casey Hampton and Jamal Williams and all the big space eaters, right? Like you could sell outside zone to get them moving and just kind of torque them and get something out of it, right? But like right. Now to sit here and say, hey, let's block back on a Grady Jarrett as in a three tech or block back on an Aaron Donald. If you tell us to do that, even the best of the centers in the league, you tell them to do that five times, they're going to get blown up, one of them. I guarantee right. it. It's just going to happen, right? And so if you can do something eye candy-wise, and that's what I'm seeing, like the really good ones have evolved and done this eye candy and different things, sending this guy, bluff here, send this guy there, have a receiver in a nasty tight split, and now he fakes, boom, gets him up the field. Now you get the kick out block. Like things like that is the kind of where this game has evolved.
Yeah, that's really good. And I like that. And I would agree with your assessment 100% that the defensive lines have gotten so much more dynamic. There was really great players when we entered the league, but all three defenses we played in the AFC East were 3-4 defenses. I had a slug across from me that I probably wasn't going to move, but he also wasn't really going to embarrass me on every play. And we might not get a lot of movement, but he's not blowing up our quarterback on a play-by-play basis. And now, I mean, the Bills roll four defensive tackles that all penetrate. They're all active, and they're a nightmare to go against. And they're allowed to kind of freelance at times too, which is really tough on an offensive lineman. And I like what you said about kind of the offensive coordinators. The offensive lines that are considered the best are generally the ones that have the most help from the offensive coordinator. It's, you know, when you can move the pocket, when you can run outside zone, then you come back with a trap, it just makes it a whole lot easier on the big boys up front. And, you know, I cover the Bills and I call their games on the radio, so that's where I hear most of the criticism. And I try and tell people all the time, like, I know you think the Bills offensive line stinks because they gave up three sacks, but they also passed the ball 50 times. The defensive line knew it was a pass. And look around the league, an offensive line made up of Deion Dawkins, Roger Saffold, Mitch Morse, Ryan Bates, and Spencer Brown. That's a pretty good offensive line. Likely a top 10 offensive line with a quarterback that's already been paid. So you can't pay everybody. You have all, you paid Diggs, you've paid Von Miller. Like, what do you want them to do besides field that offensive line? That's a good offensive line based upon where you're at. So,
yeah, I mean, there's very few teams that can line. Cleveland is the only team I'm watching line up in 13 personnel and being able to run it. Like, they're the only team in the league that I'm seeing, hey, listen, we're going to put three tight ends on the field. Seattle maybe a little bit, right? But, again, Seattle's doing a lot of this stuff. Cleveland's just lining up, three tight ends, good offensive line. Now, Chubb's a monster, obviously, but they're the only group that I'm able to see, like, hey, we're just going to line up and run it. And you know we're running it, and here we go.
Everybody yeah, but else. Even, but even then, like, and they have a great offensive line, but even then they play the Bills last week and Nick Chubb goes for 1.2 yards per carry because there's not – well, and the fact that Deshaun Watson's not back. He comes back, that's a totally different animal in offense. But all that being said, I'm going to be respectful of your time. I got a few recurring questions for you. First, do you have a favorite book?
Ooh, it's a good question. Yeah, I mean, it's No Easy Day. I'm a big Navy SEAL guy.
Love that book.
Love No Easy Day. I love all of Jocko's stuff. I'm a big Jocko fan. I'd probably say No Easy Day is probably my favorite. Yeah, I mean, I think it's I don't know why football and Navy SEALs get lumped together, because there is obviously, in my opinion, there's no correlation to what they do versus what we do, except for the fact that you have to have discipline and all of the things that, you know, come with what both of us do, I think apply to what make both of us successful in each in our own right. And so I always try and read as much of that stuff from your top leaders, your top military leaders, from your Navy SEAL operators and anything like that. And that's all I've heard. A couple of the guys who are former Navy SEALs come in and speak to us on bye weeks and things like that. And I just, if there's one person that really just grabs my attention, it's those guys. You know, when I hear them talk, when I listen to them, when I read what they write, there's no greater honor, you know, than to listen to those guys, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm in the exact same boat. What role does your faith play in your life?
Big. I mean, it's very big. And it's interesting right now because, you know, it's bigger as I mean, it's much bigger as I continue to grow and get older and my kids now raising them. And it's funny because we're in an inter-religion relationship. So my wife's Jewish and I grew up Christian. Right. And so it's balancing that kind of thing with managing traditions as well as, you know, blending the religions. And, you know, I'm not Jewish. He's not Christian per se, but it's, we believe in the same thing and we raise our kids the same way and we still honor all of our traditions. And so it's been really cool. And, the kids, it's so cool for my, to watch my kid come home and, you know, sing some Jesus song that she learned in class. And she's, and, you know, something like, I'll say something about Christmas or something. And I'll be like, Mary, did you know, like sing a song will come on. And she'll be like, oh, I learned about Mary in the Bible. And I'm like, oh, this is cool right now. So it's really cool.
Yeah. That's neat. What was your first car?
Tahoe, Chevy Tahoe. Bought it my rookie year and it's blown me away at the fact that I want to say my very first Tahoe to my most recent Tahoe is pretty much doubled in price in 10 years, which is insane to think about. It makes us feel old, doesn't it?
It does. I bought a Tahoe off a family friend in Cincinnati. I bought it for $41,000 my rookie year. Brand new, but it was a dealer vehicle. So it had like 4,000 miles on it. I sold it 4 years later for $37,000. And now a Tahoe runs about 80 or 90. So crazy, yes. Right? Yeah, yeah, it is wild. What's your favorite restaurant?
So I live in Phoenix full time and there's a restaurant out here and they've since expanded throughout the country, but it's called Steak 44. It's awesome restaurant. Comes from, if you've ever eaten at a Mastro's, so it's the Mastro's family. They sold Mastro's to a restaurant group, started Steak 44 in here in Phoenix, and then they've since expanded. There's Steak 48. Arizona's the 48th state, so in all of the other states they named it Steak 48 in different places around the country. So yeah, it's awesome.
I'm gonna have to give that a shot when I'm out there Super Bowl week.
Oh, we'll go.
Being out in Phoenix, you have no excuse weather-wise, but you do have three young kids. How's the golf game?
Golf game's good. The kids beat my game up a little bit. Yeah, because it's – especially now doing this media thing and traveling. Like, you know, Sunday I'm pretty much locked in. I just sit in my man cave and just watch games all day, kind of prepping for what I'm doing on Pat's show. Monday – I then like kind of roll back through some of the clips just to kind of dial it down for, you know, the clips I'm doing on Tuesday. So basically Sunday, Monday, out of commission. Tuesday, I'm gone. So when I come back Wednesday through Saturday, I got to pick and choose my time. You know, if I sit here and say, hey, I'm going to go play Saturday at 8 a.m. I'll be back at 2. You know, it's like, oh, are you?
Oh, right.
Yeah, I bet you are, you know, so I pick and choose right now, but I think it'll get a little bit better in the spring because we got two of the three in school and then I won't be doing nearly as much media stuff in the spring and might be able to get out a few more times.
Yeah, that's the best thing about doing media and covering a specific sport is it keeps you in that same rhythm we were kind of used to as players. And it's way less of a grind in season and there's not nearly as many obligations out of season, but it kind of keeps you in, especially with your family when you're so used to it for 12 years, it keeps you in that same rhythm. And so you almost have that off season to look forward to still, which I think is healthy for guys in their transition. Sure. All right, last one for me. This is What's Next with Eric Wood. What's next for AQ Shipley? What do you got coming down the line for you?
Yeah, so I think hopefully I can just kind of keep climbing on this media thing. I'm really enjoying this. And again, like, I don't think a ton of people have dove into this O-line stuff. I know Saturday was doing a little bit of it on ESPN, and I'm hoping I can carve a little niche out with this. And I think a lot of the people that are doing it are pretty much breaking down technique and stuff. And I think me being so fresh from playing and coaching, like, I understand the schemes like clockwork, right? And so I can see what teams are doing. I can break that down, talk about it. And I think one of the unique things, I think, at least from the feedback I've gotten, is being able to break it down to my mom or to my grandma or to my wife or to, you know, so everybody can understand it. And so I'm hoping that can kind of keep climbing. We'll see where that goes. I'm also doing, you know, like I said, the coaching side of it, I did enjoy the on the field stuff, being with the boys. And so when I retired last year, a guy we drafted, who's now the starting center for the Buccaneers after Jensen's injury, his name's Robert Hainsey. I trained him all last offseason. He would come out here to Arizona. I got a gym, which I'm in right now. We trained here, do all our football stuff, local high school type stuff. And, you know, Phoenix is like kind of the mecca for body work, massage, you know, all the crazy stuff that everybody does to get ready. So it worked out perfect for him. And I'm hoping that that can kind of grow a little bit, maybe get a few more guys in the mix, or I can train some guys 4 weeks in the spring, 4 weeks in the summer, and hopefully do that. And then just kind of be husband and dad the rest of the time, which will allow me to kind of still stay around the game, but still have plenty of time with the fam.
Yeah, that's awesome stuff. That'll allow you to kind of leave your mark on the league still without necessarily being in an NFL city, in a facility all the time. And then when you're talking about being able to explain it to your mom, I always say the best analysts in football take their football 401 knowledge and make it football 101. If you talk over people's head, it's like speaking in a foreign language to them and they get nothing out of it. You got to be able to give them something that they can go tell their buddies and be able to regurgitate it so that they feel smart at the bar the next time. And that's what makes a good analyst. And you do a great job with that. Hey Q, I can't thank you enough for your time on this podcast. Your words, your story is incredible. You'll continue to make a big impact no matter where exactly that niche is. I respect your decision to be around your family more, and I can't wait to see what's down the line for you, brother.
Big fan of yours. Thanks so much for having me, and let's do this again, man. This was a lot of fun.
Let's do it. Appreciate you, brother. Dano's and Pabst Jerky is bringing you a spicy collaboration to deliver a Southwestern punch of flavor with Dano's Chipotle Jerky. This is an all-natural, no-sugar, high-protein, and low-fat snack perfect for an active lifestyle by giving you the fuel to get through your next big adventure. Available now at PabstJerky.com. Thanks for tuning in to this episode, presented as always by Punched Energy Chews. If you haven't already, please leave a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Share it on social media as well, and we will share it too. I would also love it if you could pre-order my book, Tackle What's Next. It's on Amazon, and the link to do that is in the show notes. Let's keep making our what's next in life our best yet.